Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and again, we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God. And this morning, our topic and for the last 2 weeks is the politics of the mind. You elect leaders, and you think that's politics. And do you elect to think what you think? Or are you influenced by other things around you, the world, the flesh, and the devil, you know, the serpent in the garden? I mean, these are the stories that have come down through the ages, is that evil has been out there lurking about, tempting you to think a particular way, to think that this is true when maybe it's not true. And it gets whole nations to think a particular way or follow a particular path. And that path leads to self-destruction. While we look back in history, there were many civilizations that rose up and then collapsed. The generations worked hard, built, constructed, established connections with each other, complex economies, affluence, and then they moved into the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire threw off the imperial powers of the Tarquinian kings, and then they themselves became a republic, a free nation, unsurpassed at that particular time in technology, in the ability to construct, you know, massive harbors, roads that are some are still in operation today, poured concrete structures, four stories tall, that are still standing today. Did all these amazing things and accumulation of wealth and comfort, and then they went into decay and decline. And what was it that brought them into decay and decline? Well, the way they think. They think a different way. They started thinking a different way, and it changed the way their society functioned, and it undermine the literal structure of society. And, you know, I was thinking today while I was out baling hay, and I've been working on equipment, hay baling equipment, and trying to get things in order. And I was having trouble with what they call banana bales. And that's bales that are kind of curved and stick out on one side, and they're not square. And so I went and looked up on YouTube for all the different solutions for the problems. What's causing that? You know, is it the springs in the dogs? Is it, you know, the push fingers? Is it what's causing it? And I saw some people with elaborate additions to their baling equipment and all kinds of work that they did to make it so that that wouldn't happen. And it ended up that I didn't need to change anything in the machine. I didn't need to alter any of the settings in the machine. All I needed to do was move 6 inches closer to the windrows. And maybe occasionally speed up a little bit when the windrows were thin, you know, go to a higher gear and slow down when the windrows were thick. Because we're dealing right now, before we were haying in a regular plowed field, and with a oat and peat crop, now we're in a meadow, and the meadows are flood irrigated, and so some areas have a lot of grass, some areas the grass is not so high because the meadows go up and down. They're ancient meadows, and so you have this variety. Also, it's a different kind of hay, and so the problem began when I moved to the other hay. And but all I had to do was drive 6 inches closer to the windrow, and that now all the bales are square. So, but in order to figure out how to do that, you know, all these other guys with complicated solutions, the guy who had the answer was simply talking about what's going on inside the hay chamber. What's happening to cause this? And it, you know, banana bells can be one direction or they can be the other direction. So he said, if it is this direction, then it is most likely this. And all you have to do is drive 6 inches closer to the, you know, 6 inches to a foot closer to the windrow. And it solves the problem. And it did. Because he knew what was going on internally. He knew what this internal mechanism. You didn't have to change anything. You just had to get a little bit closer to your windrow. In life, that is sometimes the problem too. That, you know, you're thinking society, you know, there's so many people talking about modern society. Capitalism is failing, all these problems with capitalism. Capitalism is bad. Capitalism is just the private ownership of the means of production. It isn't an economic system. It isn't a moral system or immoral system. It's not a political system. It's just that what you produce, you get to keep. You make a bow, an arrow, they're yours. If you grow a crop, it's yours. And you have a right to what you produce. You have a, because of the fact that you have invested part of your sweat and toil, your life, the pumping of your heart into producing a particular item, you have a property right in that item. Some of your labor's in that item. Nobody can take that item from you without taking away that labor. Now, sure, the sun and genetics and all kinds of other things may have brought about the growing of a particular crop, but your labor is partly invested in the production of that particular item. Either you made it or you grew it or you raised it up, fed it. And so now you have a property right in that item. And anybody who takes that item from you has taken away part of your life, your time, your sweat, your toil. So they don't have any right to do that. They, you know, we were given dominion over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and the, all that creepeth upon the land, but we were not given dominion of man over man. Now, men do have dominion over men, but they are usually have that dominion because other men, you know, or men gave them that dominion, either directly by saying, we will obey you if you do this for us. If you give me this, I will serve you. You have some sort of an agreement. But the reality is you can create that agreement by your relationship. You know, you take the benefit, you eat at the table, you dwell in his house. Now you owe the master of the house. And so all governments of the world throughout history have either been restoring liberty to the people or investing the liberty of the people in that government. In other words, you could have a government that guarantees your right to property, but you can also have a government that guarantees your right to use property, but it claims to own the property itself. That's what you have in most countries today. The people have no freehold title in the land. They have legal title in the land. Legal title does not include ownership. That's in the definition of legal title. Legal title does not include ownership. It is an apparent title that carries with it no beneficial interest. You have legal title to a property. You do not own the beneficial interest, or what some people would call beneficial use. Therefore, if you want to use that which you own legal title of, you must pay a use tax. Stop paying the use tax, you lose the use of the property. That's really simple. But if you go and tell people that they don't actually own the land, their house, their business, that the government owns it and they have it by permission of the government is the true holder of the title. Usually it's the government is the true holder of the title because they hold the equitable title to the property, not the individual. It's a commonwealth. The state owns everything but allows you to use certain things so you have a semblance of private property regulated by the state. Now, in a really free nation, you actually own your land. Your neighbor owns his land. His neighbor owns his land. But you come together in free assembly to protect each of your land. You have to care about all your neighbors as much as you care about yourself. So each of you are going to protect your neighbor's rights to his land. If somebody is stealing from him, sneaking in and stealing gas at night, your neighbors are going to say, hey, you know, I saw so and so coming into your house real late at night. Was he supposed to be there? No, he wasn't, but I found gas missing. I said, well, you know, he had a bunch of gas cans with him when he went in there. And so, well, let's go over and see if he's got my gas, you know. Well, actually, that's what you do. Neighbors help neighbors. Or you take it to all your neighbors and say, so-and-so's been stealing from me, stole my cow, stole. We had a, back in the 20s, there was somebody who was missing a calf. And he said that cow had a calf, and she was bellowing for it, but I couldn't find it anywhere. I rode all over the field. I couldn't find it. Somewhere, that calf disappeared. Well, you know, with coyotes and everything, that could happen, but they'd kind of given up looking for it. But when he went into the store, the storekeeper said, so-and-so's been buying evaporated milk, and that's what they used to do in the day. They buy a can of evaporated milk, they mix it with regular water, and then they feed it to a leppy calf. Then they keep it alive and get it eating grain and then transfer it over to eating grain. A leppy calf is a calf without its mother. Well, they thought, really? And so they got on horseback and they rode out to that guy's place. I can name you the place. It's still there. But they rode out to the place, and sure enough, he had a calf in a little pen there that he was feeding up. Well, the guy recognized the calf. He says that he knew that calf was from his cow, and he went over to the corral and opened up the corral and lifted the calf up and put it across his saddle horn, got into the saddle and rode off with the calf from that guy's place. And that guy was sitting there the whole time and watched him do it, and they never said a word to each other. He knew where that calf come from. But he could say it just came wandering in. Well, you know, in the Bible it says that if you end up with your neighbor's animal, you have to return it. If you don't return it, Moses says that's like stealing. But, you know, the point was is that they knew the guy had stolen the calf. He had taken it, and he didn't try to return it. And he was just going to raise it up, and he would have a calf eventually. I mean, he had grass growing. So he thought, well, I'll just get a free calf out of this. When the guy came and saw he had the calf, he didn't yell, you thief, you scoundrel. He just rode over and saw the calf was his and loaded it up and took it home. There was no discussion, no name calling or anything. No complaint. Well, you're stealing my calf. Everybody knew what was going on. So this is in a free government. And, of course, now he brought along this other guy. They both rode out there. Why'd the other guy ride out? He wasn't missing a calf. His neighbor was missing a calf, so he went with him. And so he had a witness. He had a means of identifying the calf. And he knew he had the rightful ownership of the calf. And so, of course, when he got that calf back home, he put it down on the field. And the mother ran over, and she recognized the calf. And the calf was raised up by its mother. And so, you know, these guys were neighbors. They lived next to each other. So they knew that, you know, what the calf did was get a little too close to the fence and somehow got through the fence and ended up in the other guy's corral so he couldn't go back home. If the guy was honest, he would have taken that calf back to the field where it was come from because he knew there were cows on the other side calving. So he would have taken. Calf wasn't branded yet. It was too young. So anyway, this is how a free society operates, is that your neighbor cares about your property as much as he cares about his own. Well, there's a vast movement coming up in the world today where people don't care. They think you have no right to property. You have no right to the stuff that you make. I mean, they think they have. I mean, they'll be squealing like a stuck pig if somebody robbed them. But they don't think anything of taking from other people. And it's literally a spirit that dwells in somebody. It follows an actual pattern. You can actually, if you see things spiritually, you can actually see that spirit operating in that person's mind and in their heart. And they're given over to that spirit. They can't change of their own. And they can change and they can be changed, but they must have a humble heart to take a look at what's going on. because they have been changed. And this is the politics of the mind. They have voted in this selfish attitude into their life. They have a constituency of one themselves. And they have voted in the idea that it's okay to take from their neighbor for their benefit. And this is the politics of the mind. So this morning show, a week ago, we went over one definition of politics, but we pulled up a different definition of politics. It said it was the active association, the activities associated with the governance of a country or other area. Well, we talked about the different activities in the different kinds of government. Some governments force the contributions of the people. Some governments depend entirely upon free will offerings. Now, you don't see many of those around, but that actually is a very common form of government. And those free will offerings isn't just money or agricultural commodities, or it can be actually you're going to ride with your neighbor over to your other neighbor's house because you think he might have taken one of your calves. And he rides along to make sure that there is an extra witness. And sometimes if your neighbor has lots of big sons, you might ride over with four or five guys to get back your calf. And your neighbors are all willing to do that because of the fact that they will want you to do, expect you to do the same thing for them if somebody robs them. That's the way a free society operates. You have to have an activity of involvement with the property rights of your neighbor. You have to protect. Somebody was saying, well, you can't have property without government because people would take that property away from you. Well, to one degree, that's absolutely true. But there are different kinds of governments. There's governments that operate by free assembly, by people, virtuous people who care about you as much as they care about themselves, and they will show up. They will gather for the purposes of making sure that everybody is taken care of in the community. So that's one activity, and that was one part of the definition. The next part of the definition is that the activities has to do with the debate or conflict amongst individuals. Well, debate over what? Debate over whose calf is that? Well, there wasn't actually any verbal debate when he showed up because the guy knew he didn't have an argument. So he just let him come and take the calf. But if nobody had told him and they never went over there and looked, he would have raised up that calf. The mother cow would have forgot about it. She would have dried up. And so that guy would have ended up with his calf. He had to put a little bit of milk into it, but he would have got it over on the grass. It probably been a little scrawny and deprived, but eventually he would get, 400 or 500 pounds of free meat because he took his neighbor's calf. His neighbor had fed that cow for 9 months while it was gestating and fed the bull and had maybe raised that cow from a young calf itself, so it might have years of labor into raising up that calf. But here comes a guy who just shows up, gives it a little milk, and he gets a free calf out of the deal. But it isn't free. He's actually taken something from his neighbor. Well, that doesn't lend itself to a free society. So there was a debate about ownership. There was a conflict of property rights. He had already put some milk into it, but not enough to claim any right to it. And he did that knowing full well it wasn't his calf. So, what was the third part of that definition? Having or hoping to achieve power. What power? The power of choice. And we explained, when it says, let every man remain subject to the higher power, what Paul is really saying is let every man be subject to the higher right to choose. Because that's the word they use there. A word that actually means right to choose actually is translated liberty. In the same Bible, the same word is translated liberty because it's the liberty to choose. So what Paul is really saying, let every man be subject to the higher liberty because all liberty is of God. There is no liberty but of God. And anyone who opposes liberty opposes God because that word that they have there in the Greek means liberty. And people want to argue that with me. And of course, I've written an entire book on the subject, but I'm not just making up this argument, I go to people who speak Greek, people who spoke Greek at the time, Koine Greek, poets, philosophers. They all say, Aristotle says, that word is the strongest word in the Greek language for liberty. So Paul is saying, let every man be subject to the higher liberty. You could actually say the original liberty. What original liberty? When you got the original right to choose. Where did you get that? You were endowed by your creator with the right to choose, the power to choose. So, back to that definition of politics, it's the activities associated with the governance of a country and the individuals and parties having or hoping to achieve the power to choose, to achieve liberty. I mean, government wants more power because it will have the liberty to choose for you, and you want the government to have less and less power because you want the liberty to choose for yourself. But there are actually a lot of people who want more and more government because they think they can elect a government that will take away your right to choose to keep your stuff and make you give your stuff to them, and they get free benefits. And to think that that's okay, or to even think that that will lead to a free society, is the result of the politics of the mind. That you have succumbed to the idea that if I gather together in the collective, we can force those who have more to share with those that have less. But unfortunately, that's how despots are created. That's how dictatorships rise to power, is that people give them power of choice. And then, of course, you want to get that choice back when things go bad. And, of course, that's what Samuel was saying, is that if you want this man who can exercise authority, you can have him. But I want you to know what's going to be created. He's going to end up taking and taking and taking and taking and taking. And when you cry out, I'm not even going to hear you. So that's what it leads to when you want this man to exercise authority, especially if you want him to take away from your neighbors so that you can have benefits, that you can benefit from his power to take away from others. But that degrades society. And when you cry out, God will not even hear you. So what do we need mostly? In order to, and then, you know, also we went on to talk about the fact that, you know, synonyms for, you know, this word about politics is government, affairs of the state, public affairs, etc. And we pointed out that Paul uses a word a couple of times that means the administration of civil affairs, the constitution of a commonwealth, a form of government. And of course, the church is defined as one form of government, but it's a government that does not use force to obtain the resources to take care of the needy of society. And if you choose, and I heard today a woman speaking, she was a student and teacher at a university, and I won't mention her name. We're going to maybe do a video series where we'll talk about some of these people and what they say, and we'll put it up there, what, who said what, when. But she was attacked by liberals, by people on the left. She herself is on the left, but she had an outpouring of people who cared about her because of the fact that she was honest and spoke up about something. But the people who are supporting her are actually on the right. And she's saying, I don't know if I shouldn't just go over to the right. They're the only ones who have treated me well. Although there were some people on the left who treated her well. But most of the attacks came from the left side. And she says, but I'm actually, you know, my philosophy is very left. And he says, well, so he asked her, what do you mean? And I would have asked her even farther, but she says, well, you know, I like the Canadian health care. And so she talks about social programs. Well, the kingdom of God is a form of government. The church is a form of government and has social welfare programs too. Not most of your churches out here. I mean, they have a little token charity, but the early church, And the church, even just 200 years ago, they took care of all the social welfare of the people who went to church. If they fell on hard times or need, that they set up some way of helping them get back on their feet. And they took donations in order to have the finances to do that. And the fact that people were willing to sacrifice, I mean, it's really, you know, in modern governments, because they can force the contributions of the people, you can always find people in modern government that are willing to sacrifice your money. That's what you find out amongst many of the rich and the celebrities. They're all willing to watch you sacrifice your money to help the needy. But they themselves, there was a guy who claiming he started a school and for young kids, handicapped kids, or you know, maybe economically handicapped people. And he's talking all about his school and his school established this and the people coming to his school and everything. 80% of the school is funded by the government. It was already in existence. Other people were, he just decided to help sponsor it. So he has a foundation, and his foundation has offered as much as $2 million every year to support the school. And you think, well, wow, that's a lot of money. And it is a lot of money. And it's a good thing that he, maybe it's a good thing, I really haven't looked deeply into the program, but, you know, it sounds like a good thing that he's willing to support it up to $2 million. Now, he's actually, if they don't get full enrollment, he's only on the hook for $500,000. And that's all they'll get. But $500,000 is still no small chunk of change. But again, that $500,000 is coming from his foundation. It's not coming from him only. It's from the foundation. And lots of people can donate to the foundation, not just him. But in reality, he made $85 million last year. He could fund the whole school without any tax dollars whatsoever with his chump change. You know, I mean, with, you know, 2% or 5% of his income could go to supporting that school, and he won't even be up to tithing. And he would have put the whole bill, but he's not doing that. So it's a question of, you know, what's, yeah, he's getting all this press because he's got his school, but what if he's really not the big mover behind it? He's only supplying at the most 20%, and that's only his foundation, which is not just his money, and he won't even supply that. He'll supply like 5% if they don't get full enrollment. So I guess they could be two guys short, and he's only has to pay in $500,000 out of his trust fund, which anybody can donate to. Anyway, understanding what's really going on will give you insight into what the real solution is. So social welfare programs like Canadian Medicine and everything, they will work and they have some semblance of work, but they don't create the bonds between people that if you had direct charity or, you know, immediately indirect charity, supplying the needs of the people. As a matter of fact, you know, I was dealing with a lot of people who have medical issues, and several of them, you know, are going to go in and have expensive operations done. You don't need those operations. You could solve those problems more easily and more effectively with diet, but they don't want to do that. That's inconvenient. So they want to have the operation. Of course, they're not going to pay for the operation. The government's going to pay for the operation, but that's okay because they don't see anything wrong with taking from their neighbor. Because the government's not going to take money out of its pocket. It's going to take money out of your pocket and your neighbor's pocket. And that's the way it operates. And so you'll have to think twice about, you know, what is the politics of your mind? What is the politics of your government? Because most governments of the world are perfectly content with taking money away from their neighbor. But the government of God is not only not content with that, it's forbidden to do that because it would be coveting your neighbor's goods. So understanding that in the process of how you get there suddenly takes that option of Canadian healthcare off the table. Unless, of course, you're okay with coveting. But the problem is, really, the girl, I think she would listen if you actually talked to her. So why don't we see if we can't start taking care of the needy, the health of people, through free will offerings? Now, some people, there may come where there's some stipulation as to what you can do and what you can't do when you go down that road of depending on free will offerings rather than forced offerings. And you can't just do it from afar. You have to have some sort of personal relationship and involvement in that person's life. You know, I mean, and there's all kinds of needs. And there's all kinds of pressing needs. And so you have to have some sort of discretion in this. So what would you do? And how would you organize such a system? So anyway, we'll take a little break and we'll be right back to discuss that on Keys of the Kingdom. So welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. And so what's the solution? If you go with the socialist state, you end up not really caring about who's getting money taken away from them so that you can have. And like I say, the governments always are willing to give other people's money away more freely than they would give away their own. And you look at the Hollywood stars, and they're always doing this. And I pointed out a couple of weeks ago that the statistics show that per dollar earned, the biggest givers amongst the strata of the people are people with moderate to low incomes that are Christians and have families. They are the most charitable people in society. That if they're not Christian, they're likely to be less charitable. If they don't have a family, they are likely to be less charitable. If they are to be Democrat, they are likely to be less charitable than a conservative or Republican, because statistics bear this out as far as giving is concerned. If you're a socialist, you don't think it's your responsibility to give. You think it's other people's responsibility to give. And then some of the liberals I know, when I was saying this to, they were shocked. They thought, and the reality is, that particular one that I was talking to, I know that he is actually pretty generous. He is a liberal because of the fact that he thinks that we need to have a social safety net. And I agree there should be a social safety net, because sometimes bad things happen. But that social safety net needs to be, if you want to have a free country, it needs to be done through free will offerings. So, you know, Peter says in his Epistle 5, verse 5, likewise, ye younger, submit yourself unto the elders, yea, all of you, be subject one to another, be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. So you, and of course, we talked the last couple of weeks about the prayer of the publican, who says, you know, I'm a sinner, I need help, I'm imperfect. And then the prayer of the Pharisee is, I'm really not as bad as those guys, I do all these good things. He's proud, he's arrogant. No amount of what you do is going to save your soul. It's not even going to save your mind. But there's a turning around of the mind to think a different way. And if you really look at it closely, the social welfare through force, which is what socialism is, and Canadian healthcare is, it depersonalizes the charity. It's no longer, you don't have that true relationship to those that are providing you with. And people say, well, you know, I don't want to accept charity. I don't mind accepting government benefits. Well, that's usually the sign that there's a problem with a lack of humility. You think somehow or other you're entitled to take away from your neighbor and force them to contribute, but you don't want to take voluntary contributions. I'll bet you people who think that way are not real giving. What it is they don't want to be received from people who are really charitable, because their hypocrisy becomes self-evident. And people may think that I'm being a little bit hard, but, you know, flattering lips, what they say about that, you know, in Psalms 12:3, the Lord shall cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaketh proud things. So, you know, I don't want my tongue cut off. So I'm not going to be flattering you. I'm going to be saying, repent, turn around, let's go the other way. This is why you gather, to go the other way. Psalms 12, that was Psalms 12, 3. Psalms 44, verse 4. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust, and respecteth not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. And so it's a lie to think that social welfare through force is the solution. It will degrade society and take freedom away from all. Psalms 68:14, O God, the proud are risen against me, and the assemblies of violent men have sought after my soul. Again, the same word that is translated soul is sometimes translated mind. So they have sought after my mind and have not set thee before them. In other words, they want you to think the only solution to charity amongst the citizens of the world is through force. They want you to think that it cannot be done through charity. And it will be difficult to do it through charity, but there are people who will do it. There are people who want forced contributions because they don't want to be charitable themselves. I mean, very few people in Hollywood are really charitable in the sense of taking care of the needy. They are out there. Some of them are rather amazing and not far from the kingdom. But others are, you know, claim all the self-righteousness, but they are really far from the kingdom, far from the righteousness of God. So Psalms 101:5, whoso privily slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Him that hath an high look and a proud heart will not I suffer. So humility is pretty darn important. We see it also in chapter 119, verse 21. Thou hast rebuked the proud that are cursed. I not declined for my law. That is the law of God, that you have to care about your neighbor as much as you care about yourself. That's the law. And so in order to do that, you should gather in congregations of 10 and take care of one another. You should not make the state your father, because the state, that's the real destroyers, when you start depending upon the state for your benefits. But, you know, it's really hard for people to grasp this and follow that way, but that is the way of righteousness. You're supposed to be seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And that's what people should be doing in order to make that happen. And we talked a lot this morning about a republic and what a democracy, or not so much, but that's what we're going to talk about now, what a democracy is. A democracy is a government of the masses. Authority derived through mass meeting or any form of direct expression result in mobocracy. Attitude towards property is communistic. So they don't believe in capitalism. They don't believe the right of ownership. They believe in the right to take away from your neighbor if your neighbor produces more than you think your neighbor needs. And that's mobocracy. The attitude towards property is communistic, negating property rights. Attitude toward law is that the will of the majority shall regulate, whether it is based upon deliberation or governed by passion, prejudice, or impulse, without restraint or regard for consequences. The result is demagogism, license, agitation, discontent, anarchy. Now, anarchy is used there. This is 1928 United States Army Field Manual. That was the definition of democracy. So it doesn't really create anarchy. What it creates is lawlessness and chaos, because lawlessness, because the will of the majority can literally violate property rights and take away from their neighbor. That's lawlessness. They do it with what they call law, but it's really regulation, which we saw. Majority shall regulate. The rule of the majority shall regulate. The will of the majority shall regulate. They shall take away from their neighbor. Now, if that was the definition of democracy in 1928 in the United States Army training manual, what was the definition of democracy later on? Say in, I think it was around 1945, 1954. It says democracies lead to evil and always fail because of the moral frailty of man. A democracy can only work in a nation of saints, but they would have no need of it. So I thought that was a quote from somebody, but I think I actually wrote that originally. But it's partially taken from a number of other people who I quoted upon that, and I just kind of paraphrased it. But anyway, the quotes against democracy, there's a phenomenal number of people who've talked about. Here's a definition. Democracy, a government of the masses, authority derived through mass meetings or any form direct expression. Oh, okay, that was the one in 1928. In June of 1952, the following definition was altering the understanding and attitude of American nation towards democracy. Meaning of democracy. And again, this definition is from the Army Field Manual in 1952. And what they're saying is that the meaning of democracy, because the United States is a democracy, the majority of the people decide how our government will be organized and run. And that includes the Army, Navy, and Air Force. The people do this by electing representatives, and these men and women carry out the wishes of the people. Now, that's the how much the definition has changed between 1928 and 1952. Somebody just changed the definition, made it something else. And they refer to the United States as a democracy, and of course, originally the United States was a republic, not a democracy. So anyway, I was going to give you some more quotes on democracies and what some of the people said about it. You know, like Benjamin Franklin advised, a nation of well-informed men who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved. It is the region of ignorance that tyranny begins. And so if you don't know the definition of democracy, that's part of your ignorance. You know, I have another article. Oh, socialism is a philosophy of failure, the creed of ignorance, and the gospel of envy. And that's very important to understand, is that a lot of people, the socialists, and Peter Jordan and other people notice this, that they're not so much for the poor as they are against the rich, because it is the gospel of envy. And that's why you see such hate and anger towards the people who have produced, even if they're businesses who've created a business out of nothing. Some of the people I know had nothing. They come to town, they create a business, they end up with 10, 20, 30, sometimes hundreds of employees supplying regular paychecks for all these employees because they created this business. Now, I'm not going to say that some business owners aren't selfish, but the reality is that entrepreneurship, that the diligence required to make those businesses work, has allowed people to come out of poverty in a greater way than anything else you've ever seen in history. But again, like I say, living in this cause and effect universe, that these civilizations rise up and fall. So what we really want to know is what elements in society begin to permeate and change the minds of the people so that society cannot sustain itself. It will actually collapse and fail, the philosophy of failure. What is it that happens in a society that brings about that failure? Now, a lot of people touched on it in history. Fisher Ames, an author of the First Amendment, said, "A democracy is a volcano which conceals the fiery materials of its own destruction. They will produce an eruption and carry desolation in their way." John Adams said, "Democracy, while it lasts, is more bloody than either aristocracy or monarchy." Remember, democracy can never last long. It soon wastes, exhausts, and murders itself. Another individual said, there is never a democracy that did not commit suicide. And that's John Marshall, who was one of the first chief justices of the Supreme Court. Actually, I think he was the longest serving justice of the Supreme Court. Between a balanced republic and a democracy, the difference is like that between order and chaos. And see, that's one of the things that we understand what a republic is. A republic, the people are free from things public, but they're not free from moral devices. They cannot just do anything they want without suffering the repercussions for them. Real liberty is never found in despotism or in the extremes of democracy. Well, that's Alexander Hamilton, who I seldom agree with, but in that case, he's absolutely right. Real liberty is never found in despotism, and that includes the despotism of the individual who wants to take away from his neighbor in order to have what he wants. And so all these things play together to eat away and erode society. When you go to democracy, you know, Karl Marx said, democracy is the road to socialism. And so once you go over to democracy where you think that you have this right to rule over the minority, you've gone down a road that will eventually head to socialism and socialism to communism. It is difficult to understand how anyone who has read the proceedings of the Federalist Conventions can believe that it was the intention of that body to establish a democratic government. So you shouldn't even be able to think that if you were to actually read that proceedings that created the Constitution, that there was no way on earth that Constitution was supposedly going to create a democracy. Now, there are democratic elements within the Constitution, but remember, the people were not a party to it originally. And of course, that quote was from The Spirit of American Government by Professor John, or J. Allen Smith. I'm not sure if it's John or not. I can't remember right now. But we have to understand that we've been having our minds changed for us already, often by people who write dictionaries. You know, and even Abraham Lincoln saying, accustomed to trampling on the rights of others, you have lost the genius of your own independence and become the fit subject of the first cunning tyrant who rises amongst us. That's actually what we have been doing, is becoming more and more fit for tyranny, and less likely to suffer freedom, because we're not going the way of freedom. We're going another way entirely. Exodus 23:2 says, thou shalt not follow a multitude to do evil, neither shalt thou speak in a cause to decline after many to wrest judgment. And what judgment? The judgment that it's okay to take away from your neighbor. So our minds have already been shifted away from the mind of Christ. We go to church because they will tell us that we are Christians and followers of Christ and saved, even though we have gone away from the ways of Christ and contrary to the ways of Christ. And we need repentance. We need to think a different way. We need to have our minds renewed so that we will go this other way. So, anyway, the politics of the mind is about your mind being changed and you're not being willing to allow your mind to change back the other way, because that's what keeps you from knowing the real truth. On the page we have on democracy, we have all kinds of little articles defining the lies of democracy, doom and gloom democracy, the chapter Democracy in the book The Higher Liberty. We have links to that, Republic versus Democracy, Democracy versus Demagogues. The reality is you could just read the news. If you could read it objectively and see where they and society is headed and how it is declining and falling rapidly away from that which made it free and that we need to turn around and go back the other way so that we can seek the righteousness of God, not just the kingdom of God, the right to be free under God, but the righteousness of God and in all things. And so we need a system of welfare that sets us free. And that's what, you know, God is really all about. That's what the kingdom is really all about. That's what religion used to be about, is to go that way that sets us free. And we haven't gone that way. We've had our minds changed. And now, so how do we change them back? How do we change our neighbor's mind back? Well, we can't do it through force. What we should be doing it through is example. We just need to find more and more people, at least 144,000 people. I'd be really tickled pink if we could find 14,000 people that actually want to walk this walk and not just talk the talk, that actually want to go the way of early Israel, of the early church, because time is running out. You're not going to be able to keep going. The system will not sustain itself in its present direction and involvement. So anyway, we'll have to save the rest of this for next week. Until then, I'd love to see people join the network. Go to preparingyou.com and join the network groups. Join local congregations. Get to know other people. Talk about these things. Work in this direction. Start finding out who you can trust and seek righteousness in the way that you take care of one another. And that's a struggle in itself, and that should keep you pretty busy. Until then, peace on your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.